The golden age of radio is on the air. Morehead State Public Radio presents classic old-time radio programs from radio's golden age, the 1930s through the 1950s. On this program of the golden age of radio, Dr. Grant Adams is the family doctor, a radio play on Seward's Folly, and patrolman Dan Garrett is the Blue Beetle on an episode entitled Sabotage Incorporated. Stay tuned for the golden age of radio after today's news from NPR on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Later on today's show, a radio play on Seward's Folly, and Dan Garrett is the Blue Beetle on an episode entitled Sabotage Incorporated. Right now, we check in with Dr. Grant Adams when the carnival comes to town on The Family Doctor, as WMKY presents the Golden Age of Radio.
Hello there. This is the family doctor. Certainly a fine lunch, Lou.
Was it, Grant?
Yes. I dearly love mushroom soup. And you know I do, don't you, honey?
Yes, Grant. That's why, when you telephoned me you were coming for lunch, that's why I'm eating.
Well, it was certainly thoughtful of you. And this lemon meringue pie.
I thought you'd like that, too.
I should say.
Grant?
Yes, honey?
Just why did you come home for lunch today?
Why, I often come home for lunch, Lou. You know that.
I don't know anything of the kind. You haven't been home for lunch for over a month. What got into you today?
Well, I just happened to be up around this neighborhood and, you know, over to the window.
No, that won't do either, Grant. You telephoned me from your office you were coming home. Well, what in the name of goodness are you laughing at? I don't see anything funny in my asking.
Well, it was just that I was thinking, Lou.
Thinking?
Yeah. Nobody could ever fool any woman for long, least of all you.
Well, all right now. Come on, fess up. Why did you come home today?
Well, I'll tell you, honey. You see, I kind of thought that, well, you know, we don't get much enjoyment out of life. No excitement, you know.
Grant Adams, you come to the point now. What are you trying to say?
Well, all right, Lou. I'll tell you. There's a carnival in town.
Oh. I knew it was something like that.
How did you know?
Because you acted just like that when the circus was in Cedarton last spring.
Well, anyway, that's it, honey. Do you think you'd mind going over there tonight with me?
Why, of course not, Grant. You know, I always go along wherever you want to go.
Well, I sort of thought you might not mind. Well, I'd best be getting back to the office, I guess. Yeah, where's my hat?
Right where you left it, on the corner of the sofa.
Oh, all right. You'd better have dinner ready at 6, honey. Then we can get an early start for the carnival.
All right. We can plan to leave the house by at least 6:45.
Fine, fine. Well, goodbye, honey. And thanks for planning to go with me tonight.
All right, Grant. Goodbye. Little does he know that I've been planning all along to go to that carnival. I've got a confession to make to you, Grant.
You have? Well, come on. What is it?
I knew there was a carnival in Cedarton tonight all the time.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess there's just not any use trying to fool a woman at all. You women folk always know everything. Did you kind of want to go to the carnival too, honey?
Yes, I did.
Oh, gosh, Friday. We haven't been to a carnival since Grant Jr. left for college, I'll bet you.
That's right.
Yeah, sort of makes me feel like a young man again.
Yes? Well, I say you're easily satisfied. If it just takes a little carnival to make you feel young again, what would you feel like with a great big circus?
I don't know.
Oh, I had a letter from Junior's wife today, Grant.
Oh, yes?
Yes. I'll let you read it when we get home. I just want to see if you can read between the lines what I think I read.
Huh? What's the matter? Something wrong?
Well, I'll let you read it, and you can tell for yourself.
All right, honey. Well, here we are. Say, you'd never know that this was the corner of Walker and Maple, would you?
Well, I should say not. It looks just like the city.
Uh-huh. Where'd we go first, Lou?
Wherever you say, Grant.
Well, you know, I have always liked those fairy wheels.
Not fairy wheels, Grant. Ferris wheels.
Well, whatever they are, I like them. And they've got one here.
Well, goodness, I can see it, can't I? All right, come on.
Wait a minute, honey.
What's the matter?
Oh, look, here's some kind of a show here. Let's grab in here first.
Grant Adams, I can see that picture you're trying to hide. You're not going in there.
Oh, I see. Well, all right, honey, just as you say.
Don't throw out the worm, Tiny Tina. Weighs 427 pounds, no more, no less. What does she eat for breakfast? I shall tell you, my friend. One full wash basin of oatmeal, slab of bacon, and 1 dozen large eggs. Washed down with no less than 1 gallon of coffee, flavored with 1/2 pound of sugar and 1/4 of cream. No wonder she's large. And you'll wonder when you step inside and witness this astounding array of humanity and startling representatives of the animal kingdom that await your scrutiny.
Hey, Lou, let's go in there and see those people that man's talking about.
Oh, Grant.
It only cost us 20 pence. Come on. All right, mister. We'll take a couple of tickets.
Yes, sir. And remember, if you're not satisfied, we should be glad to refund your money.
I don't think that'll be necessary. Come on, Lou.
10 cents, 1 cent, $1. Who else wants to see this amazing show?
Grant, look.
What? What's the matter, honey?
What in the world is that thing?
Let me see. 3-headed calf discovered in the wilds of deepest South American jungles. Say, what are they trying to do to us? Why, that just isn't physiologically possible. It isn't right. That's all. What? Why, there never was a creature like that, and I just won't believe it.
But, Grant, there it is.
I don't care. I don't care what they say. South American jungles or South African or South Australian or anything. Things like that just don't happen. Come on, let's go.
All right, dear. Just as you say.
10 cents, sir. What's the trouble, mister? Something wrong with the exhibit?
I should say there is. That 3-headed calf in there. Why, I've never heard of such an outrage. How do you expect sane, intelligent folks to swallow anything like that? How did you ever put a thing like that together?
Hmm. You ain't Dr. Adams, are you?
Yes, I am, and I want my money back. 20 cents.
Oh, yeah, I get it. The boss said you might raise Dickens about that calf. Well, let me show you this, mister.
What's that?
Well, I'll tell you a secret. That 3-headed calf didn't come from the South American jungle.
Nah, I thought so, huh?
Well, But we don't want the public to know about it. And I think you'll help us keep our secret.
Huh?
Yeah. Because that calf is real. It does have three heads, and it was born right here in Dunlap County.
But you can't afford a thing like that. Oh, what? What did you say?
Yeah, it was born on the farm of one Jacob A. Kirk, 10 miles east of Cedarton.
What? Jake Kirk?
Yeah, here's an affidavit to prove it.
Oh, well, I can't believe it. I've never known anything like... Oh, come on, Lou, let's get out of here.
You want your money refunded, my friend?
No. Come on, Lou. Right.
10 cents. 1 cent part of a dollar.
Lou, what are you laughing at? Are you laughing at me?
Oh, no, of course not, dear. I'm laughing at that poor man back there, thinking he could fool you.
You are laughing at me. Well, never mind. I'm not always wrong. Well, where do you want to go next?
Well, let's take a ride on the merry-go-round. It's right near Grant. Right around that corner. I can hear it.
Merry-go-round? Oh, no, honey. Not a merry-go-round.
Well, why not, Ray? You want to go on a Ferris wheel.
Well, I know, but they're different. Merry-go-rounds always make me dizzy.
Dizzy? Oh, I see. And Ferris wheels don't, is that it?
Well, yes. Anyway, I don't feel so good right now.
After looking at that cat?
Yes. What? Oh. Come on, I see something over here I want to take a look at.
What is it?
This man over here with the walnut shell. I want to watch him from back here for a minute or two. Don't go any closer, Lou. I want to watch him from here.
All right, Grant, all right.
There is little pea. Can you tell me, little boy? You don't have to say anything. Just point to it. That's it. This clever little lad found the pea. Now I'll try it again. Would anybody care to wager their speed or perception against my quickness of motion? I'll try anything once, folks. And if a bright young lad like this one here can solve the mystery of the little pea, surely any one of you will be able to. Well, what about you, sir?
He's
trying to get Griff Miller to bet
with him. All right, don't mind if I do. There's two bits, he says. I can find it.
Two bits, the elderly gentleman says. All right, folks. Now I'll place the little pea this time under the second shell. And now I move the shells back and forth. Back and forth and again, and back and forth, and there you are. Now, Grandpa, where's little pea?
Right there.
Ah, but you're wrong, sir. Here it is, under this one.
Well, the old fool. Griff Miller couldn't see through that trick.
Well, did you see through it?
Why, of course I saw through it. And I'm going up there, bet a dollar, and bust that fella's game wide open.
Grant, don't you do it now.
Oh, it's all right, honey. Come on up with me. Stand by me. Here, you.
Ah, another comer. Are you willing to risk your powers of perception against my long, hard years of training, sir?
Long, hard years of training, fiddlestick. I saw how you did that trick. And here's a dollar that says I did.
This dignified gentleman talks like a gambling man. Well, sir, there's $2 to your one that says you didn't. Shall we begin?
Any time you like.
All right, then. Folks, watch me carefully. I wouldn't want to be in the position of jipping this gentleman here. Now, I place this little pea under the third shell.
No, you don't.
What's that?
You place it where I want you to place it. Now, put it there, under that second shell again, just like you did the last time.
Well, all right, just as you say. There, the little pea goes under the second shell. Now, I move the shells to and fro. Back and forth, and again, and there we are. Now, sir, under which shell do you say the pea resides at the present moment?
Under that one, the first.
And I lift the first shell. The little pea is absent. But under the second shell, there's the little pea. Sorry, sir. Now, would
come
anybody
on,
else
Lou.
Like to try
let's
to
get
game?
Out of here.
I have much time before I move on to the Assistant Field Douglas.
Lou, please don't laugh at me.
Oh, Grant, you looked so funny when the little pea wasn't under the first shell. Where are we going now, Grant?
Home.
Home? But you didn't have your ride on your fairy wheel.
Bother the fairy wheel. I'm going home and read that letter from Grant Jr. And if another carnival ever comes to Cedarton again, please keep me under an anesthetic until the thing moves on to our sister city of Dunlap.
Did you hear about the government buying Alaska? $7 million for Snowball.
Idiotic, I say. What a waste of the taxpayers' money.
Sewage folly, that's what it is.
the Armed Forces Radio Service, the voice of information and education, presents Seward's Folly.
Yes, that's what people were saying about Alaska in 1867. Seward's Folly, or Seward's Icebox. But the people were wrong, as they sometimes are when they're ill-informed. I'd read about Mr. Seward, who was Secretary of State under Abraham Lincoln and who stayed on after the assassination. Today, he'd be called a smart operator. And you can imagine what the conversation must have been like when he met the Russian representative, Baron Steckel.
Glad to see you, Baron Steckel.
Thank you, Mr. Seward. You alone seem to realize the value of Alaska.
I sincerely hope that I'm not mistaken in my view.
But of course not. Alaska can be a rich and fruitful territory for you. The fur trade alone will more than pay the price that Russia asks.
Oh, come now, Baron Steckel. You know very well Russia is not being altruistic in her offer to sell Alaska. Alaska is a burden for the Russians at the moment, and that is why you wish to dispose of it.
Well, there is no point in our quibbling, Mr. Seward. I should have known, of course, that a man of your capabilities would be well aware of the situation.
No need to worry, Baron. I still feel that Alaska will be an excellent buyer for my country, despite what my colleagues may think. Now is the price. I believe we have agreed on $7 million.
$7,200,000, Mr. Seward.
So for $7,200,000, we bought Alaska from the Russians. Maybe you're wondering, like I did, why Alaska belonged to the Russians in the first place. Well, if you take a look at a map, you can see that Alaska is right across from the Bering Sea, Siberia, which is Russian territory. Well, it was natural, Russia being so close to Alaska, that she'd start exploring the new territory. As a matter of fact, the Bering Sea is named after Vitus Bering, the famous Russian explorer who sighted Alaska back in 1741. After Bering, there were a lot of Russian traders who took possession of the Aleutian Islands and built the city of Sitka on the southeast coast of Alaska. Sitka used to be the capital of Alaska, and in the old days, it was the Paris of the Northwest. I guess I'm sounding a little like a historian, but you see, I was stationed there during the war, and it interested me so much that now I'm on my way back there to make my home. That's why I was trained, going back to make my own little gold strike up there. But don't get me wrong. I know that gold is one of the least of Alaska's resources. It isn't like it was back in 1899 when scenes like this took place.
Pick the gold right off the beach, they say.
$300 a day.
Nuggets as big as your head.
Opportunity. Who's next? Hurry, hurry, hurry.
Sure, that was gold. At a narrow strip of beach, 3/4 of a mile long, 500 men working that strip and making $5 to $10 a day instead of 300. But the gold fever had hit the States and tens of thousands were pouring into Nome. Most of them returned to the States disappointed and broke, although a few did make their fortunes. However, the important thing was that the States had at last discovered Alaska, more than 30 years after what people called Seward's Folly had become a possession of the United States. You must have read about the gold stampede. Writers like Jack London, Rex Beach, and Robert W. Service were caught up by the spell of the Yukon. The stories they wrote were full of tense excitement. I keep thinking of the poem Robert Service wrote, and the lines keep running through my mind.
There's a land where the mountains are nameless, and the rivers all run God knows where. There are lives that are erring and aimless, and deaths that just hang with a hair. There are hardships that nobody reckons. There are valleys unpeopled and still. There's a land to know how it beckons and beckons. And I want to go back, and I will.
I guess that just sums up my own feelings for Alaska, especially those last two lines. The rough and tumble days are over now, but there's still a lot of pioneering to do in Alaska. In fact, you're practically a pioneer wherever you go sightseeing. Two buddies of mine, Tom and Joe, were camera crackpots as I am. We were out looking for a totem pole for some gag shots when we came to one of the thousands of glaciers that you find in Alaska.
Hey, Say, boy, is this going to make a shot? Look at the colors that glacier reflects from the sun.
Yeah, I wonder how deep that canyon is.
Huh? Oh, maybe about 500 feet.
Is it all solid ice, Mark?
Sure. The funny thing is, even though it's solid ice, it flows just like water. But it flows so slowly you can hardly see it.
Oh. Say, that's interesting. How long do you think these glaciers have been here?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe hundreds of thousands of years, maybe millions.
Brother, here's where I take a shot of really ancient history.
Yeah. Hey, whoa, storm's coming up, fellas. We better head for some shelter.
How do you like that? The sun was shining only a minute ago.
Well, maybe it'll pass quickly. There's supposed to be a shelter cabin around here somewhere. Let's try to find it quick. I knew there was supposed to be a shelter cabin in this area, but finding it in a blinding storm was easier said than done. We were getting pretty soaked and worried when suddenly we saw somebody on the trail just ahead of us. Luckily, it was an Eskimo, and he was able to lead us to the shelter. He even stayed with us till the storm blew over. He was friendly, like all Eskimos are, and very helpful. We'd probably been in a sorry mess without him. We couldn't thank him enough, but he just said,
"I very glad help American soldier."
Say, you speak English pretty good, don't you?
Yes, I learned. My children learn American school. You wish come see Eskimo village?
Well, sure, that'd be swell. You'd probably get some fine shots, Tom.
Shots?
I mean pictures, with a camera. Tom did get some fine shots, and the Eskimos all seemed happy to see us. I remember we were surprised to find their homes filled with gadgets. You know, the kind you buy in any big five and dime store. Came across one Eskimo who was busy making carvings out of walrus ivory. Joe was anxious to buy the carvings, and it was a beautiful piece of work. Joe asked Gamble the price.
Hey, how much a carving?
$15.
Gosh, that's kind of deep. I don't have $15 with me.
Okay, for American soldier, $12.
Well, now, it sure looks pretty, but I don't even have...
Listen, Joe, I'll...
Never mind, Mark. Look, I tell you what. All I have with me is $7, eh? Well, suppose I take the carving. We'll be up this way again for more pictures, and then I'll give you the $5. Would you trust me?
Okay, trust American soldier.
Attaboy. Here's the $7.
The Eskimos, but on the way back, I said to him, "Hey, what's the idea, Joe? I could have let you have the $5. How'd you know when we're ever going to come back to this Eskimo village?"
"Ah, don't take it so hard, Mark. This carving's probably not worth $7. The old Eskimo was probably very happy to get what he did."
"No, that isn't the point. You shouldn't have promised him the money unless you intend to pay for it. Eskimos don't like to be lied to. They're honest people, and they expect to be treated honestly."
"Ah, come on, quit worrying, will you? You've been reading too much about Alaska. The Eskimo's probably forgotten about it already."
The old Eskimo didn't forget. As a matter of fact, Eskimos are very community conscious, and if you deal with one of them dishonestly, the whole tribe will turn against you. We found that out. It so happened that Joe was transferred to another base soon after. Whether he had intended to pay that $5 or not, we never knew for sure. Anyway, a lot of the boys back at the base took a shine to that ivory carving, and some of them went to the village to try to buy some. They were given the cold shoulder, and I don't mean any pun. The Eskimos of that village weren't doing any business with American soldiers. Well, Tom and I finally got to the old Eskimo and made good the $5, and after that, the credit of American soldiers was good all the way. If you ever get to the Aleutian Islands, Kodiak, or Unalaska, or even Attu, which is way at the end of the chain of islands, practically halfway to Japan, well, don't be surprised if the natives answer to the name of Ivanov or Simonov or any other Russian name. Because the Russians explored those islands first and left plenty of traces. You'll find lots of wooden churches with a turnip top that's typical of the Russian Orthodox churches. But I can't say you're going to like the Aleutians. They're not too much on scenery. It's foggy and cold most of the time. But one look at the map will tell you how strategic those islands are. The Navy has a radio station over at Dutch Harbor, which is on Unalaska Island. As a matter of fact, the telegraph system in Alaska is run by the Army Signal Corps. It's called the Alaska Communication System, and it's used just as much for commercial messages as it is for the Army. Let me think a minute now. There's a couple more things I ought to remember. Oh, sure, I remember now. Money. How come I didn't remember that in the first place? Well, the thing is, they seem to have a different perspective in Alaska. It's not so much the money you make, it's the work you do there that counts. It doesn't matter if you're digging a ditch or handling a law case. You do a good, honest day's work, and you're respected. Oh, yeah, what I do want to say is that before you go to Alaska, you want to store your pennies in a piggy bank. They don't use pennies. The smallest coin is a nickel, and when you get further into the interior, the smallest coin is a quarter. Well, that doesn't mean there's nothing less than a quarter. It's just that anything you do buy will have to add up to a quarter's worth or multiples of a quarter. And there's something else. Oh, yeah, I remember. The Alcan Highway. The big road. It's something to think about.
On Pearl Harbor Day, Dawson Creek was a sleepy little town in Canada.
By March of 1942, it was on its way to becoming a crossroads of the world, start of the Alcan Highway.
From Dawson Creek, Canada to Fairbanks, Alaska. From March to November, the Army engineers blazed a road to 1,636 miles of unbroken wilderness.
They said it couldn't be done in less than 2 years.
The Army did it in 9 months. American soldiers working together through mud, rain, muskeg swamps, 7 days every week, long into the night.
Officially, it's the Alaska Highway, a northern lifeline for America in war. A great highway in peace.
And for the tourist trade, let me add, there's beautiful scenery. Well, not just because I'm going back to Alaska, but ask anyone who's been there. Alaska has some of the grandest scenery in the world. And, just between friends, let me tell you that Mr. Seward wasn't near as foolish as people were inclined to believe. Instead, as I said before, he was one smart operator.
Seward's Folly was written by Joyce Stillman and directed by James W. Talbot. In the cast were High Averback, Jack Carroll, Irvin Lee, Gil Sumner, Bill Stewart, and Bud Whittem.
You are listening to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY, with the radio play on Seward's Folly and Dr. Grant Adams on The Family Doctor. Stay tuned for more classic old-time radio from the 1930s through the 1950s, when the Golden Age of Radio continues on Morehead State Public Radio, WMKY at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Frank Lovejoy is Patrolman Dan Garrett as the Blue Beetle on an episode entitled Sabotage Incorporated, as WMKY presents the Golden Age of Radio.
Character who is a problem to the police, but a crusader for law. In reality, Dan Garrett, a rookie patrolman, loved by everyone, but suspected by none of being the Blue Beetle. As the Blue Beetle, he hides behind a strange mask and a suit of impenetrable blue chain armor, flexible as silk, but stronger than steel.
Today's episode of the Fox feature, The Blue Beetle, is entitled Sabotage Incorporated. Throughout the country, foreign spies and saboteurs are busy trying to prevent the shipment of war munitions to countries with whom their native country is at war. Near York City is located Explosives Incorporated, one of the largest manufacturers of munitions in the country. Every night, trainloads of munitions leave their factory for some secret destination. As our story opens, Officer Manigan and Patrolman Dan Garrett, who is really the Blue Beetle, are investigating a mysterious telephone call from Wentworth B. Charles, president of Explosives Incorporated, who lives at the Monaco apartment.
Well, here we are at Charles' apartment. Push the button, Donnie.
There's no answer.
Well, let's break in the door.
Now, we'd better call the superintendent. He'll have a pass key.
Is something wrong, officer?
Who are you?
I'm the superintendent of this building.
Oh, well, we got a mysterious telephone call from Mr. Charles, which he didn't finish. It was of such a nature that we felt it necessary to make an investigation. He doesn't answer his bell or our knocking.
Well, I have a pass key here. I'll unlock the door for you. Something's holding the door shut.
Then come on, then. We'll break it in.
No, wait. I'll telephone the owner of the apartment house. He'll,
Well, we can't wait for that. Come on, Danny. Let's break in the door.
All right. Here we go.
There's nobody here.
Look in the bedroom there.
Okay, I'll have a look.
I hope nothing happened to Mr. Charles. He's one of our best tenants.
Hey, Johnny. Look. Here's Mr. Charles and his...
What is it, Mike? Is he dead?
I think so. Look. There. Over his heart.
A wound.
Yeah. Right through his pajamas. A 22 bullet, I'd bet.
No, it's a stab wound.
That's Mr. Charles, all right. Is he dead?
Yes.
Who could have done it?
That's what the police would like to know. That's what we have to find out.
Well, I don't see any weapon.
Look for an ice pick or a thin stiletto.
Okay, I'll have a look around the apartment.
Hadn't I better telephone the owner of the building?
Not yet. And don't leave the apartment.
Yes, but
whose apartment adjoins this on the bedroom side?
Professor Vladimir Deniskius.
What's his business?
I believe he lectures on anthropology.
Does he live alone?
He has a male secretary who lives with him, I believe.
Who lives on the other side, next to the living room?
Oh, that apartment is vacant.
Did Mr. Charles live alone?
Yes.
Apparently, Mr. Charles was killed while he was phoning. The receiver is still off the hook there, and his body is lying in front of a telephone table.
Yes, it looks that way.
I can't find any sign of a dagger or ice pick anywhere. There's an electric icebox in the kitchen, so I don't think Mr. Charles would be needing an ice pick himself.
What about the windows?
They're all locked.
Any fire escape?
Nope. It's a 14-story drop to the street on all sides.
How many floors above this, Superintendent?
15.
Any other entrances to this apartment?
Only a service door in the kitchen.
Yeah, I looked at that. It's locked and bolted from the inside, and there's no knob on the outside of the door.
Well, Mike, you'd better phone the coroner. I'll just have a look around the apartment. And then I'd like to question the professor and his secretary. Maybe they can throw some light on this case.
Oh, good evening, Professor.
Good evening. And what can I do for you?
This officer would like to ask you some questions.
There's been some trouble next door, and the police are interested in getting some information.
Well, won't you come in, please?
Thanks.
Now, what is it you would like to know, officer? I am sure I cannot be of any assistance to you.
Did you hear any commotion or unusual noise tonight in Mr. Charles' apartment?
No, nothing. In fact, I have been so busy with my studies that I doubt if I would have heard any noise coming from anywhere. When I am doing my research work, I concentrate very deeply.
Do you have any children, Professor?
Me? No, officer. I am not married.
That gun there, do you use that in your research?
Oh, that? That belongs to my secretary. He is off tonight. He bought it for his little boy. It is an air rifle. Hardly strong enough to...
Do what?
I mean, it has the appearance of a real gun, but it would be no good for hunting game other than small birds, I assure you. Here, have a look.
Yes, I can see you're right. I presume a BB shot from this air rifle would hardly have enough force behind it to kill a man.
Kill a man? Has someone been killed?
Yes, Professor. Mr. Charles, your next-door neighbor, was murdered less than an hour ago.
You know, Danny, this case is very, very puzzling.
Very, Doc. But the Blue Beetle's going to solve the puzzle.
How?
I'm going to revisit the Charles apartment alone and do a little private investigating.
Danny, what do you think is back of this murder?
Sabotage of some sort. I'm positive it has something to do with a train of munitions and guns being shipped to Canada.
Well, be careful, Danny boy. If your suspicions are correct, you'll run into a ruthless gang of murderers.
I know that. But the Blue Beetle can handle them.
Have you everything you need?
Mm-hmm. This Blue Beetle chain armor and mask, my magic ray and spotlight are all I'll need tonight. I'm traveling light because I've got to travel fast. The Blue Beetle's going to solve a murder and strike a blow for humanity.
Bedroom.
The body's been removed. But nothing else has been disturbed in the bedroom here. That picture on the wall there, facing the spot where Charles was sitting when he was killed, it doesn't hang straight. I'll have a look.
You understand what I mean?
A hole in the wall back of the picture, just large enough for a rifle barrel and to hear conversation.
Now, here. Here is the railroad map again.
Yes, I see.
The munitions train will approach a bridge to Canada over the gorge along this track here.
Yeah.
Now, our major plan is to blow up the bridge as the munitions train is passing over. But if for some reason our men are unable to place the charge of explosives under the bridge, our alternate plan is to wreck the train and block the entrance in the entire road, as well as destroy the munitions aboard the train.
Well, how will we know in advance which plan to follow?
I'm expecting a call any minute from our leaders at Glasno, near the border.
Then as soon as you get word, I'll be on my way.
Yes. Your job is to take care of any guards at the American side of the bridge.
Yes, I understand. This will take care of them.
Oh, the air pistol that shoots glass pellets filled with suffocating gas, huh?
Yes. It makes very little noise. Whoever is shot with it remains unconscious for a long, long time.
Oh, good. Now, there are two planes tuned up and waiting out on the airfield. You take one of them.
All right. And you're sure no one suspects our plot?
Positive. I liquidated Charles before he could telephone the police.
What about money?
Here. Oh, here is $1,000 for expenses.
Okay.
When the job is done, there'll be plenty more where this came from.
Good.
Hello? Yes? You what? Yes? Yes, we're ready at this end. Wait. Here's Igor now. Just a minute. I'll ask him. Well, what about it, Igor?
The munition train is loaded and we'll pull out for Canada in 10 minutes.
Hello. Ronaldo. Igor informs me that the train will pull out in 10 minutes. Yes, all right. Everything is moving smoothly. We'll be with you soon. Goodbye.
What's that?
That's the Blue Beetle.
Yes, the Blue Beetle, and he's going to nip. You have an ingenious method of entering, Mr. Blue Beetle. Did you by any chance fly to my window? And just what do you want?
I overheard your whole plot from the next apartment and crawled along the ledge outside the window.
Then he knows
everything. And I'm going to turn you over to the police, all of you. Get away from that phone, Professor, or I'll burn you with my magic ray.
Oh, no, you won't, Blue Beetle, because you won't be able
to. Put down that gun.
Shoot the gate.
There. That'll fix Mr. Blue Beetle.
Let us get out of here. The gas is making me sick.
And what about the Blue Beetle?
You tie him up and take him down to the freight yard and put him aboard the munition train. The Blue Beetle will have a rude awakening sometime in the early morning hours.
What will
will happen to the Blue Beetle now? How soon will he recover from the effects of the suffocating gas? Can he save the shipment of munitions to Canada from destruction? Which plan will the saboteurs put into effect? These questions will be answered in the next episode of The Blue Beetle. Copyrighted Fox feature appearing in Mystery Men Comics magazine and the Blue Beetle magazine. The Blue Beetle is on the air twice a week on this same station. Consult the broadcast schedule in your local newspapers. And don't forget to listen in to the Blue Beetle.
Saturdays at this time, we spent an exciting half hour of adventure and action with America's public hero number one, Hopalong Cassidy. Well, even two-fisted cowboys take summer vacations when they can, and Hoppy is no exception. Hopalong and Topper will be back with us riding the CBS air trails again September 22nd.
Calcium helps grown-ups to a more vigorous life.
And now there's calcium in hot wheat meal.
Calcium helps your body run smoothly.
And now there's calcium in hot wheat meal.
Calcium helps you to enjoy a more active life.
And now there's calcium in hot wheat meal.
Yes, a 1 ounce serving contains 1/3 of your daily calcium needs. And post-wheat meal is a whole wheat cereal, creamy, smooth, delicious, cooks instantly. Get new post-wheat meal with more calcium than any other cereal, hot or cold.
Beetle. Sweeping down upon the underworld to smash gangland comes
the mysterious, all-powerful character who is a problem to the police, but a crusader for law. In reality, Dan Garrett, a rookie patrolman, loved by everyone, but suspected by none of being the Blue Beetle. As the Blue Beetle, he hides behind a strange mask and a suit of impenetrable blue chain armor, flexible as silk, but stronger than steel.
Today's episode of the Fox feature, The Blue Beetle, is the second part of a story entitled Sabotage Incorporated. In the previous episode, Wentworth B. Charles, president of Explosives Incorporated, has been stabbed to death, apparently with an ice pick, as he was phoning the police about a shipment of munitions. Investigation discloses no murder weapon and no clues to the killer. All doors and windows of the Charles apartment were securely locked and bolted from the inside. A later secret investigation by Dan Garrett as the Blue Beetle discloses that the occupants of an adjoining apartment, a Professor Daniskew and his male secretary, are part of a sabotage ring whose purpose is to destroy a trainload of explosives and war munitions as it passes over the Rocky Gorge Bridge from the United States to Canada. As the Blue Beetle confronts them, he is rendered unconscious by a suffocating gas shot from an air pistol by a young girl named Vicky, one of the conspirators. As the episode ends, the conspirators plan to dispose of the Blue Beetle by dumping his bound and unconscious body aboard the munitions train, which is to be destroyed. As our story opens today, Vicky is on her way in a private plane to Rosno, near the Canadian border, to supervise operations at the bridge. The professor and Igor are to follow as soon as they dispose of the Blue Beetle.
Well, Professor, here we are at the freight yard.
Yes, and if I'm not mistaken, that's the train with a load of guns and explosives aboard.
Yes, it's moving.
Yeah, we'll have to hurry. Give me a hand with the Blue Beetle here.
Yes. All right. There he goes. He's heavy.
It's his chain armor. Oh. Now, here comes an empty dump car.
Yes.
We throw him in. One, two, three. There he is. Farewell, Blue Beetle. You may reach heaven when the train blows up, but you won't stay long.
Ha, 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 ha,
talk France. Have you seen him, Danny?
No, not for some time.
Have you got any idea where he might be?
He said something about working on this explosive.
Yeah, that's when they talk, but hey, seen him.
What's that, Mike, in your hand? A present for your youngster?
Oh, that. That's an air rifle. I found it in the apartment next to where Charles was killed.
Find anything else?
Well, nothing much, except this. Any idea what it might be, Doc?
It's an aluminum mold of some sort.
Yeah, for making knitting needles or something, but what would the professor be wanting with...
Wait, Mike. I've got it.
Got what?
The weapon that killed Mr. Charles.
What do you mean, Doc?
That aluminum mold was filled with water and placed in an electric refrigerator. The water froze into little sharp pointed icicles about the size of an ice pick blade.
Yeah, I can see that.
Then they were shot from that air rifle at the victim. Even though the air rifle looked innocent enough, it is a particular type with sufficient air propulsion to make those needle-pointed icicles penetrate deep into the victim's body where they melted, leaving no trace.
But how could the murderer get to him? The door and windows was locked and bolted from the inside.
The murderers probably bored a small hole through the wall and shot him from their apartment.
That's it. That's what happened. Well, Doc, I got to get down to headquarters now and report.
Must be something important to bring that guy out on a stormy night like this. Hey, there's no lights in the switch house.
You better slow down.
Green signal's up.
Yeah, but you never can tell.
Well, keep an eye out on your side as we reach the switch to the Rosno spur track.
Okay. Hey, look there.
Where?
Up there in the sky, ahead.
Why, it's the cruising lights of the airplane.
Yeah, but look underneath it.
Well, I'll be. There's a red light falling and swinging from side to side.
Hey, maybe he's signaling us to stop. Look, there's a guy in a parachute that's dropped out of the plane.
And he's waving a red lantern.
That's strange.
Well, there's the bridge right ahead.
Maybe something's wrong with the bridge.
All my signal lights have been green.
Except the red lantern on the plane.
Well, here goes the brake. I hope I can bring this train to a stop on these slippery rails.
So long, Blue Beetle, and thanks a million.
Okay. Give my regards to your neighbors across the border. Tell them we Americans are glad we both speak the same language. In more ways than one.
So the Blue Beetle prevented a frightful tragedy and through sheer nerve outwitted a clever band of foreign saboteurs and murderers. The moral of this story is that there never will be the perfect crime. Crimes like the murder of Mr. Charles, no matter how strangely and cleverly done, will always be found out and the guilty punished. Further adventures of the Blue Beetle will be presented in the next episode of the Blue Beetle. The Blue Beetle is a copyrighted Fox feature, appearing in Mystery Men Comics magazine and the Blue Beetle magazine. The Blue Beetle is on the air twice a week on this same station. Consult the broadcast schedule in your local newspapers. And don't forget to listen in to the Blue Beetle.
The Golden Age of Radio on WMKY, featuring Frank Lovejoy as patrolman Dan Garrett on an episode of The Blue Beetle from 1940. This has been the Golden Age of Radio, classic old-time radio programs from the 1930s through the 1950s. Material for this program provided by the Internet Archive, an online nonprofit library of books, movies, music, and old-time radio shows, on the web at archive.org. Tune in again for the Golden Age of Radio next week at the same time and channel on WMKY at 90.3 FM and online at WMKY.org.